I'm such a sucker for intro music and the pop. God, when that music hits and you go pop, I mean, you hear and look at that crowd, it's insane. Yeah, I think that it's so interesting because, I mean, granted, they shocked us with it, and I get it. Brock was a big, bad man, and he was a real, obviously a UFC champion and a recognized wrestler and all of these things. Such a powerful force. I get it. Him being the one to break the streak. And again, maybe this is just my silly dark brain, and maybe I'm biased because I believe in like passing the torch, giving someone like a real rub.
Right.
But what are your thoughts on maybe Bray getting to do that instead of Brock in retrospect?
Yeah, it would have been, I've spoke on that. I don't think Brock needed it.
Right.
Brock was already, in my opinion, established star, mega star.
Yeah.
But I think a guy like, and Roman ended up being another mega star, but it would have been good for Roman to do it at the end of my career if you're going to pass it on. But Bray, if the storyline would have been done right, that would have been ideally.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much you could have done there. Yeah. I mean, not only you're not passing the torch, you're passing spirits, you're passing
100%.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
There would have been so many levels,
generations
to that. Exactly.
Yeah.
And shit that he would have been able, obviously, things happening different than what they did with him, but I mean, he would have been able to pull that crap out for years and years and years. There would have been so many, like I said, so many layers.
Yeah.
And that would have been, I think that would have been the ideal person to, to do that with. But
they could have potentially used your character for a few years as well, just in promos and things like that with Bray potentially.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the guys up there? In 300, they had to go get the were they oracles? They had to get the oracles okay to go to war.
Yeah,
and they didn't do it. Yeah,
it's almost like he has to go to the throne.
Yeah, he has to go to the throne to declare war on somebody.
That's kinda so cool.
Yeah, yeah, there's so much like he has to go to the pits of hell or whatever go to you that's sitting on this throne of death and or whatever. Like, yeah that could have. But so Tony, is Attitude Era your favorite era of wrestling, or was it like, I mean, it's everybody's, right?
I mean, how could it not be, right?
Yeah. I feel like it is.
Oh,
outside of this guy, I mean, who were you on the edge of your seat for? I mean, because I feel like everyone during that time, I mean, every match was a great match. Every Monday night was must-see TV. It was better than any pay-per-view that you're going to watch. You know, it was amazing.
And it was just so funny. That's the thing. Like, it's like, I mean, it was just hysterical. Yeah, it was really just, the way that they were able to make it so refillable. It wasn't, it's not the most iconic moments that stand out to me. It's those random, it's when I'm on Twitter following these goofy wrestling things, the things that I forgot about.
You and me both.
Yeah. But it was just so crazy. I mean, it's interesting because, again, I graduated high school in 2003. So that was kind of like whatever happened right after that. Like, I moved to LA and like all these things. So like everything changed. So like when everybody started going, what? To Stone Cold, that's where I'm kind of like, that's just after my time.
Yeah.
So there's like a gap. There's a big gap between 2004 and like 2000, whenever Daniel Bryan and Bray were really like, So whatever that was, 2011, 2012,
somewhere in there.
But I mean, The Rock, Stone Cold, all the promos, all the things that they were saying to start an episode, just the, I'm such a sucker for intro music and the pop. Yeah. I'm all about the pop.
All about
sometimes
the pop, yeah.
If I need a pick me up, this is true, by the way. Like if I need to like fire myself up, there's like a few things I watch. Kelly Pavlik, an old boxer from my hometown of Youngstown, beating Jermaine Taylor
in a boxing
match. There's a new middleweight champion of the world, and he's from Youngstown, Ohio, Jim Lampley says, and it gives me energy. But there's a lot of little wrestling ones. Mm-hmm. One of them is the first ever entrance of Chris Jericho, that final countdown where it's like a throwaway. You forgot the clock was running. It's this weird thing they were showing. Felt like 8 months of just this burn
and burn. The clock running down to the year 2000. Yeah.
And that's one. Oh my God. When that music hits and you go, pop. I mean, you hear and look at that crowd. It's insane. Even though I'm not a big WCW guy, that one time that they threw away that Monday night and and they let Goldberg beat Hogan on a random Monday in Atlanta in front of Goldberg's entire sold out stadium, and he gets him up in the jackhammer and jackhammers him. And I mean, you know, I will give WCW credit for that. It's kind of charming in its trashy ways, because I kind of like the paper cups and everything being thrown into the ring. Gives it so much interesting flavor for an uncoordinated, you know, sloppy fest. But that's one. There's so many. There's just pops. The reaction of the crowd is what gets me in anything. It could be anything.
Do you watch the girl that does the ring announcing now? Was Samantha Irvin or something?
Yeah.
Do you follow her on Instagram?
No.
You need to, if that's what you're into.
Oh, what's going on?
So she has a camera sitting on her. Have you seen
any of these? Yeah, she is. Yeah.
And like when there's a surprise, like there's one famous one where when The Rock comes out and she doesn't realize The Rock, and she's like a kid. She's like that 9-year-old on your living room floor on that Monday night when you hear the glass break and Stone Cold comes out and you're jumping up and down. That's her as a grown person.
Ring announcing.
Yes. Oh, and she's a ring announcer.
Yeah. Amazing.
And it is so awesome to watch those reactions that she has with the camera that's on her that she's got in her little area right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
She does a really good job.
And it's passion. I love seeing passion with it.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. There's a lot of people that just go through the motions, man, but she's good at what she does, and then she's having fun while she does it, and it's pretty cool.
So we like to do Mount Rushmores, not just Mount Rushmores of wrestlers. Mm-hmm. We like to do Mount Rushmores of other things that's going on in wrestling or what's happened in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of them that I'd like to hear from you. First one I would like to hear from you is, who is your actual Mount Rushmore of wrestlers? Like who's your four?
Four wrestlers all time?
Yeah, all time.
Okay. Now, this is a tough one because I'm a big promo guy. I'm a big straight-to-camera guy. I'm not the in-ring technician guy, so I'll throw that disclaimer out there. And so, with that said, and, you know, I was born in 84, so all these people that are going to say, what about Bret Hart? What about, you know, whatever. There's your disclaimer. My Mount Rushmore, and I have not prepared for this, but I'm going to go for it. And I'm going to say, I'm going to keep it real. First of all, like you said, Ole Anderson. No, I'm kidding.
What the hell?
I was Antonio. I was about to hit you with a chair, man.
I would love that.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, man, it's a real simple.
It is. So it's, you know, the people that hit me the most. Ric Flair, The Undertaker, The Rock, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I love Hogan. I get it. And when I was a tiniest of little kids, Hogan was my original gateway in. Like when I was literally three or four and I'm like, goo goo gaga, what's that? Like, but as soon as I became like anything, I was always about the heels. Still to this day.
I'm the same way. I was a heels guy when I was a kid.
So those are my big four, without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, those are the ones that I've listened to those four guys talk more than I've listened to my own father, my brothers. Like it's if we were to compile the hours. Again, it's just me with a TV tray. Because, again, I'm the youngest of five, but I'm the youngest of five by 12 years.
Right.
So when I was five, my closest brother was in Columbus going to college at Ohio right. State. So I had the whole, you know, little garbage house to myself. So I was just trying to entertain myself. No dad living with us. So, like, these giant men were larger than life. It was like some form of testosterone in the household. And so it was all super, super influential and unbelievably entertaining to me. But yeah, it was the funny people and the darkness and the, you know, that's what hit me. I wasn't that big. You know, I liked DX. I should have been a bigger DX fan for what it was. Like, suck it. Yeah. But I kind of saw, like, the immaturity of it wasn't that impressive to me. I remember the grade underneath me all being DX people and the grade underneath them all being DX people. There's a certain psychology of ages.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and us 84 kids pretty much, like, agree across the boards on these things. You know,
I was born in 83. I'm not a big DX guy. I'm a huge Triple H fan. I'm a huge Shawn Michaels fan. I'm a, you know,
yeah.
And
oh yeah.
I individually, I really like these guys. Together as that group, I wasn't.
That moonsault into the tombstone. I mean, ridiculous. You must hear it every once. Day. But oh my
only
god.
Only did it once.
Oh my god.
We practiced, never could get it, and we just do it. We'll do it tomorrow. And we
really?
Yeah. We tried it three times the night before. I missed him every time. We did it.
Whoa.
We did it in the show and perfect.
Wow.
Thank you.
Oh my god. That is so cool.
Yeah. That is good stuff. So Mark, this is for you as well. You guys can combine on this. You can come together
come
to build
together.
This. Right. He loves to sing. Mount Rushmore of wrestling moments that really, because there's two that pop in my head that really, like, changed, I think, wrestling. And the two that I have is Hogan beating Andre.
Slamming Andre.
Yeah, slamming Andre.
Yeah.
And then Hogan turning heel.
Hmm.
And you can say what you want. I just feel like that night is what made the Monday Night Wars what they were. Hmm.
The Mount Rushmore of moments.
Of moments in wrestling history.
Yeah. You have to think, I think, like you do, like, you just can't think of, you have to put it in criteria. Like that was my original Mount Rushmore. The influence that my Mount Rushmore wrestlers had on the industry, that's how I put mine together. I'll start with Andre being slammed by Hogan.
Okay.
That's a moment. The Austin 316 promo.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Huge.
Rock and Hogan meeting in the ring for the first time before their WrestleMania, where they just stared and looked at each other. Mm-hmm. And I think the streak getting broke.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
That's great. Great analysis. When I did just like I did Rogan with you and with Ric Flair and with Jake the Snake, I also did it with Hogan. And I made him, again, because Joe's thing with pro wrestling is, wow, they put their bodies through a lot. They're unbelievable athletes. I don't really get it.
Right.
Like, it's this thing. But I go, Joe, you need to see what it's like when Hogan and The Rock face off. And one of my favorite things is getting to turn the serious people. You see a glimmer in their eyes. They're just like, whoa. And it, you know, it was very cool. We played it on the show, which is like it's a special thing to get to shoehorn something in there. Like a Joe, you got to see this means it has to be good.
Right.
You
right.
Know? And yeah, that was so cool. And yeah, we've covered all four of those moments except for Austin 316 on his show. Because I remember him seeing the reactions to your streak being broken on one of the ones that I did with him as well. I don't know if it was the one that you were on, but we very rarely roll video of right. pro wrestling, even if we're talking about it or right. this or that. Only the very best stuff. And, but yeah, yeah, man. Wild that the, all four of those. Stone Cold's thing. What year was that?
That was 90...
King of the Ring.
98, right after King of the Ring. Yeah. I think he had just wrestled Bret Hart. They had that just killer match. And he came out the next night with Austin 316. Means I just kicked your ass.
Yeah. Oh,
man. And we were off. We were off and running because we'd been getting our asses handed to us mm-hmm. for weeks and months at that point, but you know, from when the Monday Night Wars, that was kind of the.
Mm-hmm. You don't put Hogan turning heel in there, huh?
Nah.
Where do you put that, Tony?
You mean NWO?
Yeah, when he turned. I mean, this was when he turned heel for the first time, or the only time, really. I guess.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a different type of person, and I get it. A lot of my wrestling buddies, they add a lot of WCW stuff to this list and that list and things like that. But I mean, again, other than the unbelievably comedic, I mean, it's their doofy decisions that stand out to me as like unbelievable. Like again, Goldberg giving that away. Just here you go. We're going to win every Monday after this, because we're giving this away, so we're telling them anything can happen on a Monday, but it's like, no, you just gave away the money shot.
All the money
oh
right there.
Oh, my God. I just can't put WCW stuff. And again, the NWO was cool, you know? I'm 14 or whatever. That period of time should have hit me like a ton of bricks. But again, I always look at the little things, the little details, like... You know,
Kevin Nash said it best.
Virgil's in it.
But that's what I was about to say. By the end of it, like there was like only two or three people that weren't NWO.
Well, what ended up happening that they screwed the pooch on that, right? Like, but you know, Kevin Nash. I mean, like everybody in the place was part of NWO, and it became something that was just stupid. The very beginning of it was really cool. It was like, you know, that was the reason why they were able to end up beating WWF there for a while, right. But. You know, Kevin Nash has gone on record by saying, he goes, you know, we come in there and that first night and you got two dudes that are from the other product and we beat up your entire locker room.
Yeah.
With just two of us and a baseball bat. And he goes, you essentially hurt yourself by doing that. You just said that nobody in your locker room
could take us,
which this whole thing is supposed to be. The outsiders are WWE's invading WCW. Right. He goes, and we beat up your entire locker room the first night. He goes, and Kevin Nash said, he goes, y'all are never going to beat Vince.
Right. Yeah, that's a brilliant point. I never even thought of it that way. I'm looking back at it, whatever, 30 years later, like, oh, yeah.
Booking ain't easy.
Uh-uh. Yeah.
No, it ain't. It's not. I mean, to make things, to clear up, you know, holes and, you know, things that you don't think about. Like you said, you just, I never look at it that way.
Yeah. You have to do it week after week. So even if you have something that works once, they're waiting next week. So it's like, whoa.
I think that writer's job, that has to be is that the hardest job in wrestling, you think?
That you don't have to do, I don't know, man.
Without having to get in the ring.
I don't know. I mean, our riggers and stuff like that have a hard job, but I'm talking about stress. And it's not so much now, but when the big man was still there, that was a highly stressful job and a very short-lived for most. I mean, there was a pretty high turnover rate.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, people would just quit because they couldn't handle the pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
And to have your ideas that, you know, I can tell you as a writer, I've written for a lot of things where other people are executing what you've written. And when you believe in it and then it gets thrown out mm-hmm. at the last minute, that's devastating.
Oh, yeah.
It makes you feel like you're worth nothing. And this thing that you envisioned, you know, you'd almost do it for free if you felt like you were making a change and people were enjoying your work. So like money doesn't save it when your creative, when your creativity goes to waste.
Yeah.
That's a hard part, is the script being thrown out an hour before the show and rewrite it, like that part.
There were several times I know with me where this is something you just had to, you had to accept being in the WWE in those early days. It's like you might, you know, we spent hours and hours and hours on the road driving from one town to, and that's where a lot of good creative happen. You're drinking beer and you're talking and, you know, everybody's kind of snowballing and ideas, but then you come.
A lot of snow.
Well, you just.
He's throwing you under the bus over
not
there.
Not you. No. Your friends.
I was mainlining, right? No. But have ideas and storylines and you pitch it for yourself. And it goes, that's really good. And then give it to somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
I took a couple of gut shots of stuff that I had like worked and just detailed after. And he was like, God damn, that's f-ing awesome. I'm going to give it to someone. And I'm like, no, that was for me. He goes, nah, doesn't work for you. But this is going to be great. I'm just like, oh.
Do you remember a good one that was executed that we might remember?
No, I think I burn them out of my brain.
Right.
Just.
Yep. Compartmentalize. I get that. Yeah. We were just talking about that last night, about a couple terrible auditions that I had, and I can't remember a lot about them from back in the day.
Yeah.
Because I literally like just ship them off.
You got to.
Down the chocolate factory to be able to survive. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be able to do that. Yeah.
Short memory.
Short memory.
Yeah.
It's getting shorter all the time, as we found out.
So, Mark, you know, we've done some Mount Rushmores of wrestling. Since we have Tony here, what's your Mount Rushmore of comedians? I mean, you are a... I know you're a savant. I'd like to hear yours as well.
Savant.
It's out of control.
I Googled...
Did you figure out what that... Give me the definition of savant.
Somebody that knows about wine.
Somebody that knows about wine is a savant.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure. Dinner tonight. Hopefully a savant will tell me which.
Recommend tonight. A good wine.
Yeah, I can recommend a good wine. And I'd like to hear yours too, Tony. Who's your Mount Rushmore of comedians?
Gosh, dang.
I mean, this is easy as well. I mean, there's one that is on everybody's.
There's the one.
Yeah, Sinbad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, you get Pryor on there.
You have to have Ole Anderson on there.
Yes, Ole has to be. Ole has to be on that. Right, yeah.
I love how you keep bringing up Ole too. He told him he couldn't ever. He's the one that nobody would ever pay to watch him.
And I'm trying to be nice because Ole just passed away.
Yes, we're not going
to
talk. Oh, he did.
Him and Virgil both.
They just passed away, but he was the one. Yeah, Ole's the one that told me that no one would ever pay money to see me wrestle.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Ooh-wee.
We're going to put a picture of him on the shelf. But
I have a couple of those in the comedy world. They're pumping gas in upstate New York right now. Exactly. I'm not even kidding.
man, I like Chappelle. I mean, you gotta,
yeah,
absolutely.
Man,
that's where I met you. I met you at Stubbs at a Chappelle show.
Yeah.
I remember his manager coming over cause he knew I was a wrestling fan and, he goes, look over there. And God damn, that was a starstruck moment. It's interesting because people are, you know, living in LA for almost 20 years, you see all these people, but no one's literally like larger than life. You know what I mean? And then there's you amongst a bunch of nerdy stand-up fans, just blatantly, just literally a half a body taller than everybody else. All these executives and everybody just trying to weasel their way towards Chappelle.
And I'll say...
Who let the freak in?
Yeah. I will say... You know, I echo that statement because I work with a lot of different celebrities, country singers and whatever, and even social media people and everything else that are, I guess, quote unquote celebrities. But He's the only one. Like, I just went to a huge thing in Vegas back in January, and I'm at an event where, like, Liver King is there, and there's just all these big celebrities that are there and stuff.
Right.
And what's the question that I'm getting from everybody? Hey, where's Undertaker?
Yeah.
Hey, how's Undertaker doing?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, where's Mark at?
Liver King can suck it.
All right. That's
all right.
Yeah. You should listen to Hulk Hogan, man. Just take your vitamins and say your prayers.
Yeah.
Well, that was the problem. There was too many vitamins.
Yeah, too many vitamins. Who's on your Mount Rushmore, Tony, and comedians?
Well, we're matched up. Definitely those two. Mine's a little tricky because it's weird, right? Because, again, it's different eras, different ages. So, like, Jim Carrey affected my childhood so deeply. I mean, from In Living Color to Ace Ventura to... oh, God, what the hell? Yeah, everything. But especially when he did A Man on the Moon, where he played Andy Kaufman. I was in eighth grade, about to be a freshman in high school. And it was like, I didn't know anything about Andy Kaufman. And I was expecting it to be this funny movie, this really silly movie, because I knew he was playing this comedian. That's all I knew. And it ended up being, of course,
dark
and kind of like creepy. And so I bought all the way into it. And so we'll throw Jim Carrey at number three. And, you know, it's crazy. It's an impossible thing for me. I mean, I could throw David Letterman in there. I could throw Shane Gillis in there right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's killing it.
He's a monster. I have to go up after him all the time now. We just convinced him to move to Austin, and now I have to follow his ass. And I love it, though. He's the best, the most fun hang. But, yeah, Louis... You name it. They're all there. They're all
Norm.
It's hard.
Norm McDonald for me is on. He's on mine.
It's hard to pick four in comedy.
Yeah. We usually do fan questions, like three fan questions. And I want to give that responsibility to you. Like, do you have, it could just be one question or it could be three questions that you've always wanted to ask The Undertaker about his career, anything.
Wow. That's an interesting one. The Tombstone is such a horrifying move in real life. Like, you know, to actually do that to somebody, it's a pretty crazy move. It's a scary move with a lot of responsibility on you and on the other person. And I guess my question is like, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but like, what's the worst that's ever come out? Because you've obviously had to do it thousands of times.
Well,
I mean, you must know more than me.
There's a couple of
significant ones.
Yes,
I should have. I should have googled this instead of saying.
No. For the most part,
Coco Beware used to be 6'6". By the way.
So, let me start with Coco. So, when I debuted Survivor Series 1990, I was Ted DiBiase's. You know, he debuted this guy, so I got to work against Dusty Rhodes, the Hart Foundation, and Coco Beware, and. Obviously, the whole match was designed to, you know, make me look good and shine. The very first tombstone that I give was to Coco. And I give him the tombstone. 1, 2, 3, he's out. Anyway, we end up finishing the match, whatever. I get backstage. Coco is like, He gets me in the hallway, and man, he's just giving me the riot act. Like, man, you know, somebody gives you your body, you got to be able to protect them, man. You hurt my neck. And I'm like, Coco, man, like, hey, if I hurt you, man, I'm sorry. Like, I really pride myself on, you know, being safe and taking care of the guys that I'm working with. I said, I apologize. And he just, you know, he kept going. He was pissed. He kept going. And, anyway, it got to the point where, like, I'd apologized all I could apologize for, you know, and I was like, and that's what I said. I was like, Coco, I've apologized to you as much as I know how to do. I said, if you're not going to accept that, like, you know, maybe we need to go out in the lot, and, you know, and figure this out.
This versus Coco.
Well, hey, Coco was tough, man.
Yeah, he's a tough dude.
But, yeah. I mean, he's already confronted me. I mean, you know, right. He's already given me the riot act. He's looking up at me. I'm like, that took balls in its own right.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he was like, no, man, you just need to learn to be more careful. And that was it. And me and Coco were fine. We've been fine ever since. And, you know, anytime we see each other, you know, we hug and everything else. Would you shut up?
Let me snug. We're just showing the.
For perspective.
Oh,
like, come on. It didn't deserve all that now.
He poured him up like a cheap table.
Anyway.
Oh, dude.
Used to be
you were going to take him in the lot and beat the shit out of him after that?
I would apologize. I apologized.
He had probably forgotten that you'd apologize. Every time you apologized, he probably had no. I don't know if I brought this up to you yet, but you need to be safer out there.
Could you imagine if he was actually facing the hard camera where we could actually see what happened?
Oh, man. Yeah. That's why it looked so bad, because I wasn't facing hard camera. If I'd have been facing, you would have. Anyway, so all these years.
He's like, oh, it's a little bit of a snug tombstone.
So all these years. All these years, I thought, I really
You did. Have to show that. I'm sorry to keep interrupting. But you have to have that go over again and again on the actual video part of this. That one little gif.
I've been Coco just and all of the
leg disappearing.
We had to, the first time he ever talked about this, we had to do a follow-up where Mark was like, you know, after watching that video.
Well, that's what I was about crying. To say. Like, I, after it came up, I did. I actually went and watched it back. And I was like, oh.
So bad.
Coco had a little bit of beef there. I was like, damn. Because I was always under the impression, I was like, man, he's overreacted here a little bit. And then I went back and watched it, and I was like, holy shit, I damn near killed Coco.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But you almost made Frankie an orphan.
Yeah. The only one, obviously, that's worse than that, I mean, it was when I damn near broke the golden goose's neck with the air tombstone.
You know the Hogan story, right?
No.
Oh, you don't know this story?
Oh, man.
1991, my one-year anniversary with the company, I wrestle at Survivor Series. I wrestle none other than the Golden Goose himself. And that was, you know, Hogan was referred to as the Golden Goose. He was the star, the moneymaker, the big dude. So... I'm going to win the championship. And at the time I was the youngest, that would have made me the youngest champion in WWF at the time history. Like Hogan back in the day, you know, the rest of the talent usually had to show up by 1 o'clock on a pay-per-view TV day. Hogan usually roll in around 5, you know. Do his deal. So I get there. It's at Joe Louis Arena, Detroit, Michigan. I show up there about noon, 12:30. Hogan's already there.
Oh.
And I'm walking down the hall, just going to my locker room, and he goes, hey brother, can I talk to you? I was like, yeah, sure, man, yeah. I said, let me just drop my bag off. He's not. I'll come with you. So I go into the dressing room. I put my bag off. He goes, hey, let's go back here into the shower. Like back in the day, you go in the shower, usually means you're going to settle something or something that had to be discussed. It was important. You're either going to fight or, you know, something was going to happen. That's usually where it happened at. Mm-hmm. So we go back into the shower. Nobody can hear us. Nobody talk. He goes, hey, I'm really nervous about taking the tombstone. You know, I got this bad neck. And I was like, Terry, I said, look, I promise you, I said, I'll take great care of you. I don't need, you know, you don't need to worry. I'll have you. I said, just don't worry about it. Well, you know, I've got a lot of neck issues. I was like, well, I mean, you know, And he's like, I'm going to do it. I just need you to know I got these neck issues. And I was like, brother, I promise you, your head will never touch. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we have this conversation. We part ways. Now, every time that I see him for the rest of the day, like, you know, going through catering or whatnot, you know, he gives me the old, like, don't forget what we talked about, right? Right. He's like, he'd hold his neck and, you know, give me brother. So, you know, it started to get to me a little bit. Like, I'm about to beat Hulk Hogan for the world heavyweight title. And so we get into the match, and match goes the way it goes. Now it's time for the finish. Finish is where I'm going to tombstone him on a chair. Flair runs down to the ring, slides the chair into the ring. I give him a tombstone on the chair. That was going to be it. 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. When I tell you I had the man, and the man was, I've given my kids rougher bumps than I give Hogan.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I wrap him up. I've got him. The chair comes down. Boom. As soon as my knees touch, right, which, you know, Hogan's a big dude. Boom. As soon as my knees touch, oh, brother, you got me. I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, I just crippled the golden goose. I just hurt Hogan.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've gone from becoming champion till I'm going to probably get fired over this, right?
Yeah.
This is all running through my mind in the instant. Like, oh, yeah. Crap. You know, he warned me. I am just, like, in strict panic mode. He's laying there. Finally, he gets up, and he leaves. I don't remember if he was helped out or whatnot. So I'm here. Like, I'm supposed to be having this moment, you know, it had to have been internal anyway, because I'm the Undertaker, and the Undertaker wouldn't celebrate. But mm-hmm. All I'm thinking of is, like, I'm about to go backstage and get fired. And I've hurt Hulk Hogan on top of it, right? This is like, you just fumbled. So I'm walking back, and I get backstage, and I was like, where's Hogan? And they said, no, he's in Vince's office. I'm like, oh, great. So I go in. Into Vince's office there at Joe Louis. Hogan's laid on the floor.
Oh, no.
Got people all around him, you know. And I'm like, holy shit. So I'm going over, like, you know, check on him and, you know, apologize and everything else. Like, as soon as I start to get over there, here come the EMTs. And, like, it's, you know, back then it was still kayfabe and everything. Everybody protected the business. So I went into the restroom and was, like, kind of behind a retaining wall that was like that. And, you know, I can hear the conversation, you know, like, hey, can you feel your hands? Can you this and that? And I'm just like, oh my God. And I'm just like in strict, I mean, I'm in total panic. And Shane McMahon comes back, and, you know, he's like, he's shaking his head. He's like, I don't really understand why he's shaking his head no, but he's shaking his head like, don't, you know, you shouldn't be worried about this. And I'm just like, you know, are you freaking kidding me? Yeah.
What is he at the time, like 18 or
something?
Oh,
yeah, he was young. Yeah. And, I can hear the EMTs, you know, they're checking him out. And then all of a sudden I hear Hogan go, somebody get my wife and kids on the phone. And I'm just f-ing like, oh. Anyway, they put him on the board, and then they put the board on the gurney. They take him off to the hospital. I'm just like, I'm done. Like, I'm gonna have to start calling, you know, I'm gonna call and apologize to Ole, tell him I'm
you're right, Ole. I'm right,
but can I just, you know. So I'm walking down the hall, right? And I just think I've crippled Hulk Hogan. And, you know, guys are coming up to me like, Mark, his head never touched. And I'm like, no, I can't hear it, right? I mean, I can't, that, none of that is registering with me. I'm like, no, man, I dropped him. I dropped him on his head. I hurt him bad. I mean, they took him out in an ambulance, and everybody's telling me, like,
you're rationalizing it. The chair that's 2 inches higher than what you're used everything. To tombstoning. Yeah. He must have clipped it.
But everybody's coming up to
you. You're probably replaying what you actually did to Coco Beware.
Right. But everybody's coming. Everybody's coming. That's great.
Yeah. Not again.
Coco.
Not again.
Coco was probably at home rolling. See, it's son of a bitch. No. So, but all the guys are coming up and saying, like, man, his head never touched. And I'm like, no, man, I got him. So we didn't have, like, I didn't have the same accessibility to monitors and playback back there in 91 as we do now. So it took a few days before I actually got to see the footage. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, fucking head never touched.
Right.
Here you go, Tony.
He was old school. Wow.
You can see how far his head is from the chair.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I've given my kids much rougher bumps than that.
And what sucks about this is Mark has his family in town.
Yeah, I'd flown. Right. Like, I'm still trying to dig myself out of debt, but I'm about to win the World Heavyweight Championship. So I've flown my family to Detroit.
Wow.
From Houston. And, you know, they're ready to celebrate and have a good time. And I can't even, you know, I couldn't eat. I
missed
couldn't,
your reservations.
Yeah, everything. It was horrible. But now I see the footage and I'm thinking, his head never touched. Like, why? You know? So now I'm having to have this, they come up with this Tuesday in Texas, this pay-per-view that they just add out of the clear blue, pay-per-view on Tuesday. Never happened, but now there's this Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view. I'm thinking, oh man, this is going to be my punishment. They're going to take the title away from me right now. And all this stuff's in my head, but I'm going to get an answer. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, I ain't got fired yet, but like, I need to know what's going on here. So Terry shows up and I pull him aside and I was like, Terry. And he goes, yeah, brother. I was like, I watched the footage back of that tombstone. He was like, yeah, brother. Yeah. And I was like, your head never hit. He goes, oh yeah. Yeah, brother. Well, what it was is that you had me so tight when you were protecting me, but you had me so tight that when I came down, like I didn't have any room to move and it wrenched my neck. And I'm like, at that moment right then, I knew. I said, okay. Like, what am I doing? I can't, you know, I'm not going to fight Hulk Hogan. I don't, you know, that's definitely a red slip there, a pink slip. But it let me know everything that I needed to know at that time about who he was as a person. Like, come on, man. Mm-hmm. Like, and to this day, I don't know if he was just trying to hold me back, whatever the situation was, but yeah.
But now he found Jesus.
He did not want to lose his championship belt.
I don't, you know.
As clear as day. I mean, that's the, right? I mean, it is just the ultimate Hoganism. And he almost got to kind of love it, right? Because it's like that belt to him, even though it's always time to move somebody up and give them the elevation to him. Even though, again, it's like you have to write the story. You have to always have it evolve. It's a weekly show. I mean, you have to have other people win sometimes. It's so interesting to me. His unbelievable, never-ending desire to come out as number one.
You go back and watch that match. The one thing is my pet peeve of that entire match with him was Mark tombstoned him earlier in the match. And at that point, Mark's never lost. No one's ever gotten up from the tombstone. He tombstones him. And within 3 seconds, Hogan is up, shaking the ropes. He didn't sell it at all.
Of course.
And it's the first time he had ever taken the tombstone. Wow. And I go on record by saying, if he would have laid there and sold it and allowed Taker to cross those arms and kick out on two,
yeah,
that would have been he would have blown the roof off the place if he would have done that. Hulkamania is alive and well.
Right.
Bobby Heenan's over here screaming that Hulkamania is dead, and all of a sudden it's back alive again.
Right. But instead, he had to no sell it.
Yeah.
And it's a lesser experience for everybody in the arena.
Let it go,
makes
Matt.
Him, makes him look weaker, makes the audience not as excited. Yeah. And, you know, and for what? Like, it's like, that's your opponent. Give him the two count. It's such an interesting.
It's better for you.
Yeah, totally, it's better 100%. For, yeah,
it would have been better for him.
But yeah, but anyway, so.
That's the story of Hulk Hogan.
That's amazing. Honestly, I like the Coco Beware story more. That, I was not expecting that video to be so damn funny.
Oh, he almost killed him.
And facing the other way makes it better.
Oh, it just it made it look worse
there's
than it
so
was.
Many, there's so many things wrong with
Who
that.
Who would have guessed that guy tombstoning Coco Beware was a month or two away from his first youngest ever championship belt?
It's amazing.
1 year.
I think Kane might have got one rough too when I wrestled him. He's a big dude.
He's big. He's
just big old tough. Thick war. But yeah, he's so tough he didn't, you know.
Yeah.
If I'd have give Hogan the tombstone, I give Kane, and I would have bought it. Like, yeah, I about to killed you.
Yeah.
But Kane just got up with me. All right.
It'd have been so much better if Kane did all that to you as well that same night. Like,
all the years later.
It'd have been great.
You got me, brother.
Well, another great episode. And Tony, man, what an honor to have you here on
What an
the show.
Honor to be here. Just a few Texans hanging out, sneaking away. Got my Buzz Milk coffee. Gonna go shoot guns and do comedy and eat good food. Happy to be here.
Man,
right around the corner.
Can't
we got
you enough.
We gotta get you to the mothership though. That's my
Absolutely.
Beef. That's my only beef. We're right here. It's Rogan's Club. It's
all right.
Us.
No, all right.
Bunch
I got
of
you.
It's bunch of the boys.
Yeah, too easy.
You. Laughing it up.
He knows he knows though that I don't go out.
It would be easier for y'all to bring the show to Mark's house.
No.
No, we have a balcony. You're separated from everybody. No one will bother you up All there. Right. It's great.
All right.
Bring the lady or whoever you want or whatever. The boys, the
I'm
girls.
I'm going to bring
whatever.
Coco.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Just make sure you guys are facing the right way right when you're way. Watching the comedy show.
No, Coco. Turn around.
Coco, turn around. Turn around. That's Frankie there.
I can't wait to run into him again.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Because I haven't seen him since his text where he said he used to be 6'3".
Are you coming to WrestleMania in Philly?
I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it. I have to do a weekend of shows. I could technically. I'm in Houston on the Saturday, so I'd have to get on a flight Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it seems tough.
Well, Tony, once again, appreciate you coming.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Congratulations on all of your success.
Yep.
And what you're doing is absolutely amazing. Where can people find your show and all that good stuff?
Kill Tony is on YouTube every Monday at 8, and all the back episodes are fun, too. So catch up and enjoy the ride. See me live. I'm on tour all over the country. And TonyHinchcliffe.com for tickets.
Awesome. Well, we want to
rock the garden.
Man, yeah. Go kill it. Oh, yeah. Burn the place down.
Yep.
Burn 100%. The place down. Thank you, First Form and Wiley X Sunglasses, for helping us keep this thing moving. And Tony, we appreciate it, man. Thanks, brother. Yeah. You're welcome back anytime, brother.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I can't wait.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, T.
Thank you.